you now cast yourself as a defender of Back to the Future.
I will defend the fact that it is as advertised till the day that I die, because it literally is as advertised.
I'm not interested in seeing someone do back handsprings across a stage, okay? Like, I'm not interested in tricks.
Then you went to the wrong show.
Huey Lewis in the News saved this. Sorry.
The orchestra?
Slay, slay.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're talking about Back to the Future, the musical. This is the second in the journey. Actually, this is the first in the journey. No, second of the one signature playbills of the New York trip for me.
Mine doesn't have any.
And it's Casey Likes.
He came out, I have to say, he signed for everyone and then, you know, walked on to get his dinner.
He went to get, oh my God, what was
Pliable.
That place called?
Pliable.
Pliable, which I believe is like an acai bowl of some sorts.
We walk in the same direction.
It was a two show day. So if you're ever wondering what he likes to eat in between shows, it's Pliable. I'm like, should we be saying this publicly on the internet? Like, don't follow him there if you see him.
No, just let him get his dinner if he wants, okay?
It's right. And not to be even creepier, but, like, this man was holding an iPhone 14, which is a much bigger screen than my iPhone 10. So I could see that he was on Instagram looking at who tagged him in stories from Back to the Future. So, you know what? Broadway stars just like us. But let's talk about this show because, I think we will have quite differing opinions on this. Not that I think that this is revolutionary in any way, but just based on the, discussion that we had in between shows on the Saturday that got pretty heated, over this, musical. But I guess we should, like, take it back to the very beginning of, like, your relationship to Back to the Future, if any, and then also, like, our day of what happened, like, that day. So we take us through the entire day of, like, the rush process and all of that. So let's start with your connection, relationship to Back to the Future as a property in general.
I feel like my parents are going to listen to this and be like, this is not true, but I've always thought of this as, like, a dad movie, a movie that my dad really liked and I watched with my parents when I was younger. So I had seen it when I was much younger. And I also feel like as a movie, it really like permeates the culture. Even if you've never seen the movie before, you know about the characters, you know about the concept, you know about the style, like the outfits, the fashion. Like it really is one of the movies that like defined that time period that is carried forward. So even again, even just through culture, I had seen it, but even just through culture, you're able to absorb so much of Back to the Future throughout. And then I heard there was going to be a musical and it was on the West End. And I honestly didn't have strong feelings either way, knowing it was going to be a musical until I saw it, obviously. And now my feelings are so strong.
So I had never seen the movie up until this week. But as you said, it's kind of something that just was like in pop culture, in culture in general. Like everyone has dressed as Marty McFly for Halloween. And the real only thing that I knew about Back to the Future was like, way, way back when my family went to like Universal Studios, it's not there anymore, but there used to be a Back to the Future ride there. That was, I wonder what it replaced it. Cause
it's the Simpsons ride. They just like did an overlay of the Simpsons ride.
But I just remember the DeLorean.
This is in Florida.
Yeah, in Florida. I just remember the DeLorean like outside when you would walk by and then the big title of like Back to the Future, the ride. And maybe there was like a pre-show of like Doc speaking to you as you were in line type thing, like on a TV screen. That's like really all I remember because clearly the ride does not stand out to me at all. But also I did this for the first time when I was like in grade one. So I really do not remember a lot of that. And then same thing, like when I heard that it was going to be a musical, I was like, oh, okay, that's fun. Like people love Back to the Future. There had been like mixed reviews on the West End, and then when they transferred to Broadway, I don't know that I was surprised because it is pretty like tourist type of show, which I think we'll talk a lot about in this episode, but it also just kind of like made sense when they talked about like special effects and that it would be something that like a American audience would enjoy. So that's that. When it comes to the show itself, this had been on like a list for a while. I think we had talked about like last year that going in the fall used to be like a great time to go because things would be opening, but turns out like not a lot of stuff was like opening up for the first time. And I had been to New York. Had you been to New York that year too that you had seen stuff?
No. The last time I've been was the summer before.
Right. But there wasn't like that much that we were interested in playing at that time. So it was kind of like, okay, let's go to this. Also, we had said on an episode last year that like our friends had just seen it and loved it. And I had heard like fun things about it. And we knew that it would be a decently easy rush ticket to get. However, I will say we were surprised the day before when we went to Here Lies Love, when we saw the line at the Winter Garden, and we were like, oh, maybe this isn't an easy rush ticket to get. I don't know why that weekend. It was a holiday weekend.
It was Veterans Day. It was Veterans Day.
Yeah. So I guess that's why it was like busier than normal. I don't know that it's always that busy at Back to the Future, but like we were quite surprised at the line around the block at like 8:30 in the morning on a Friday.
Yeah. What time did we get there? 8:45-ish?
I think we got there on 8:45 because we were nervous from what we saw the day before. And there were people ahead of us.
There were people ahead of us. Maybe we were like 10th in line-ish. I remember we got there before 9 for sure because the Titanic rush, digital rush that we didn't even end up getting was at 9 o'clock. So we wanted to be in position by 9 o'clock.
Yes.
Yeah, there were about 10-ish people ahead of us. People had brought chairs to sit in. To wait for the rush, and then the line extended so far back behind us. I don't even know.
And do you remember the drama of that? Of that at halfway through, maybe someone came out from the box office. And was like, just like attention to everybody, but tonight's show is sold out. So if you were here for tonight's rush, there are no tickets left. You are welcome to stay for the matinee rush, but like if you're planning to go tonight, then please leave. And I kind of knew that that situation might have happened because I was, before we even got to New York, I was looking at availability because we could have moved some things around based on availability of other shows. And
that's a big tip. Some shows hold aside tickets for rush and some shows sell just unsold empty tickets for rush. And so if you're planning to rush something and you're relying that on that as your ticket purchasing method, going on Telecharge or wherever they sell the tickets, looking at the seat map, seeing what's available, monitoring it, that's going to give you a good idea of how much rush is available, what they're going to be offering for that day or not.
The other thing that I will say that has become super helpful in the last like recent years is the TKTS app now lets you know about next day purchases on like a Friday. So you could tell if TKTS was selling a Saturday matinee ticket for Back to the Future, like you would be fine for rush. But we kind of knew that the night was questionable, and also the Friday. There was a day that weekend, I can't remember what day it was, but one of the days was 100% sold out. So it was a very like good, they did well that weekend for sure. I think I heard someone say, was it the box office woman that was like, we'll be sold out tomorrow too? I can't remember.
I don't remember, but I do know on TikTok, I want to shout out a couple people that I watch who go over the Broadway grosses. I think it's like Brian, the business analyst, and like Dylan at Theme Park Entertainment. Both of them have spoken about how Back to the Future performs like a long-running show. It doesn't perform like a new show. It performs like a long-running tourist attraction. So its highs are on the same weeks as like tourist attraction shows. Like, I was going to say Phantom, but it's close. But same as like Wicked, Lion King, those big tourist shows. Yeah, have bumps on tourist attraction weekends or tourist times, and then like kind of fall down a little bit, not that much, but fall on weeks in between. And Back to the Future behaves like those shows. It does not behave like a new show in ticket sales,
which is so interesting because at the time, like, this show opened last summer. It is it the last show standing for this season from the fall?
Oh, good question.
I think it might be, because Harmony is closed now.
Harmony closing. We've just heard of, what's the other one closing? How to Dance in Ohio. When did that open?
In the fall. It wasn't open. When we were there, it was opening 3 days later.
Yeah.
Or, so, like, November.
It was 3 days later. Yeah, so it opened in 2023.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to last very much longer. It might be done by the time this
episode is released. We are pre-recording this episode, so things could change. However, we won't be talking about nominations because actually when this is released, or maybe not, maybe I'll be editing this line out, but nominations aren't out yet. So, but we won't be talking about nominations. The only thing that we might talk about here, which I'll just say right now, is that the eligibility for Back to the Future did come out at the end of last year. And that's, like, really all that we know from this. I think we could get into the fact that you and I probably don't think that this is a super awards-baity show. No. But it's, yeah, like, it is interesting. I was just Googling, let me just find this here. I think I had said this on, like, a previous episode, but, like, they've extended themselves here already for tickets to be on sale well into 2024. I believe, hang on, Telecharge has updated their website, everybody. It's quite different.
I haven't been on, but I saw that.
So at this current moment, they are on sale until December 2024. So that would make sense of what they say of this, like, performing like a big tourist show. It's not surprising to me, no. Although I think, like, you would argue when you see it, it is surprising, but I also don't know that you are the target audience of this show, but we can get into that in a second. So,
yeah. I mean, sorry, back to the Rush, but the funniest part was the people who brought chairs
didn't even say.
They go up to Rush and, like, we need 8 tickets, and it's like, you can get 2 per person.
I forgot about
and
that.
And they're like, we need 8 tickets and they need to all be together. And they're like, no, you can get single tickets. And then they left. So they had been there before we were. With chairs to wait.
And they books. Didn't even they were reading.
Yeah, they were ready for this. They apparently didn't know the rules of Rush, didn't understand what was going on, and then just straight up left, didn't buy tickets, because they couldn't get 8 tickets together. if you want 8 tickets together, you have to buy them in advance. Like, yes. That's the downside of Rush. We got our Rush tickets, and we ended up in 2 single seats, both extreme side on the right.
Yeah, and anyone listening, Rush tickets for this show are $40. I don't want to say it's like a you get what you pay for, but, like, in this economy of theater, it kind of is a you get what you pay for situation, because the regular price of these tickets are, like, well above $100.
I think about this a lot. I honestly think $40 was too much for the seat I had.
Yeah.
In terms of sight line.
Also, did she tell us that it was obstructed? She must have.
I'm sure it was. I probably have the ticket somewhere.
I also have to say, on us, we kind of just accepted the first thing that she gave us. Yeah. We didn't really ask any other additional questions. But also because we had seen the people in front of us on both sides, like, eat up tickets. And then they had also told us that there wasn't that many tickets available for the afternoon. So we were kind of like, okay, we're just going to take whatever
we get. What we get.
Whatever we get. Yeah. I just had the ticket here a second ago.
And I'm like, where I might have it somewhere here.
Okay.
But basically what I'm saying is I feel like $40 was too much for the seat that I sat in for the first
time. It does say partial view, just to point that out. Okay.
But thinking about this, right? So we
this isn't partial view. This is fully obstructed.
Yeah. This is obstructed. We went on the matinee, right? And we got a Rush ticket. The evening show was sold out. So does that mean that they sold the seats that we sat in for full price?
100%.
That's outrageous to me, to be honest.
The people beside one seat in that is just as obstructed as my seat paid full price for those tickets.
Paid full price.
I also do have
outrageous,
a full bone to pick while we're here. While we're just going to talk about, like, all of the issues. Not even of the show. I understand that it's Times Square. I understand that Broadway is a little bit different than, like, a smaller market theater house. But if you are arriving 45 minutes late with a party of 10, you better keep your mouth shut when you are entering that theater. And you cannot ask for a booster seat for your child if you are 45 minutes late. And the usher brings it out. At first I was like, oh my God, this is great. I can move over. Steph can come and join me at intermission because there's literally 10 seats. Well, it was actually 5 seats next to me and 5 seats behind me. It was a full family. And then 2 people were there from the representing party on time and then like waited for their families to come through and was like ushering them in and speaking at full volume. I'm like, we are in a public place. I don't care if you don't like have respect for me, but like there are people performing right now. Like, zip it. Keep your mouth shut.
And not to say that this doesn't happen at all shows, but I do think this is a particular problem with a very specific type of show.
100%. They're not doing this at Merrily.
No. And what I'm going to say, and this is, we're about to
fight now.
We're about to lead in.
Should I have like a boxing ding ding like go off at this moment?
The behavior that they were exhibiting is a behavior that is appropriate at a theme park. And to be honest, to be in that room, I wasn't a theme park. So like the experience that we had was Universal Studios theme park entertainment. And when you put on a show in that way, you foster behavior in your audiences that is appropriate for that venue. And this is, I'm not saying it's the show's fault, but I'm saying you've created a certain environment, this high energy theme park environment. And not that I don't like high energy. You've created an environment that is theme park. And then the audience responds in kind. They give back what they've been given. So obviously it's super rude, in my opinion, to arrive 45 minutes late and then speak at full volume. But the environment is not dissuading that in any way based on what the show is giving.
I don't disagree with you. However, I also experienced something similar at MJ. And I feel like that is less theme park like sure. environment than Back to the Future. But I would say this could happen at the Lion King. Not that we can afford to go to the Lion King on Broadway. No.
Well, we'll be going in Toronto next year.
That's true. I forgot that this is happening. Yeah, where's your hat?
I was going to give my hat to my dad, but then I kept it. And I was like, no, I'm going to keep it for when we record.
Rewind to the episode. And I don't know so much about like Wicked, but I also haven't been to the Gershwin in a long time to know.
Yeah.
I would also like to point out that the respectful people there were the children. It was the adults that were the loudest.
Always. It's always. You know, when a child, I mean, it really depends, but when you're seeing a show that is catering towards children, which I would say in some ways that this show is, and you have a child maybe being excited, even loudly.
That's fine.
Like, that never bothers me in a way that adults speaking during a show.
But this was the thing. It was like a, hi, how's it going? I'm like, are you really asking this question at 45 minutes into a show? Like, I cannot believe that this is happening right now.
Remember when we saw Alice in Wonderland in December?
Oh my, I'll never forget. Oh wait,
that
this
show
December.
Was 90 minutes. This past December. This show was 90 minutes long. Halfway through, a full party of 10 walks in.
Yeah.
We're just like, okay.
I actually think it was more than halfway through.
The first half of the show. I mean, it's 90 minutes.
Crazy.
An hour in.
But then they stayed after to like meet the cast. I'm like, what did you see?
Just skip the show at that point. It's over. It's done. You missed it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about this musical. Steph, please tell everybody why you hated it so much.
We've already kind of like delved into it a little bit. I really felt that this was a theme park, and I have never felt more in a theater, in a Broadway house, that something is a cash grab than I have felt in this Broadway theater watching this show. I understand that the goal of Broadway musicals at the end of the day is to make money. I understand that Broadway is a property business, that Broadway theater owners are landlords. I understand that 100%, but I have never felt more that this was, that a show was so corporate and so so just like solely financially motivated than I have watching this Broadway show.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
What did you expect?
That's a wonderful question. I don't really know what I expected. I just think when I saw the show, every choice that they made was the conventional, obvious choice, in my opinion. Like, every choice in adaptation was the, like, most basic choice that they could have made. I didn't feel like there was any, I didn't feel like anything interesting was done with this, with the material. I didn't feel like anything was I didn't feel creativity in this adaptation in any way. I just felt it was very by the book, by the numbers. And it was just like, oh, we're just doing a fan service to people who are familiar with the movie,
mm-hmm.
in order to sell tickets and just give people exactly what they expect. And when you say, what did you expect? I don't know.
Because
maybe just something a little bit interesting.
Because this was exactly what I expected. So I can't fault it for being exactly what I expected.
Sure. It is as advertised, absolutely.
This is the thing. I think that, like, when we talked about this directly after and, like, how, like, upset you were by this production.
No. I was just really heated.
I just kept saying, like, but...
I was
like,
in a bad mood.
But I just kept saying, like, you paid for this. Like, this is...
No, I know.
It's a commercial property. If you watched 100%. A trailer, it is exactly as advertised. And as I said to you the other day after watching the movie, it is literally, like, word for word, the exact same.
Yes,
minus, like, a questionable racist moment in the movie.
Besides just, like, some bizarre things.
So, like,
whatever.
I can't fault a project for being exactly as advertised because I paid to see something that was advertised.
No, 100%. And I think maybe I come at a place where, because we're fortunate enough to see so much, I'm not being as selective as only seeing things that deeply interest me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We end up seeing a lot. You even see more than me, but we end up seeing a lot of things, not just to see them, but because I love the art form. And I want to see so many different things in the art form. So I can't say that when I saw the trailer, I was like, wow, this is going to be my new favorite show.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm interested to see that because I love Broadway. I love musicals. I want to know what is capturing audiences right now. I want to know what people are seeing. I want to be able to have an informed discussion on what are the shows right now. So again, that is partially on me as a critic, calling myself a critic,
yeah.
but not having to see everything, but seeing lots of things that, knowing in advance, that aren't necessarily, like, my personal taste. But to be honest, like, I like fun things. I love fun things.
I enjoyed this obviously much more than you did. Mm-hmm. I do think, which we have discussed many times now, our seat also put a damper, like 100%. It dampened the entire experience, because there was a lot that was missed. We've talked about before that, like, when we say that you don't like something, it has nothing to do with the actual people on stage or 100%. Like, I don't know, anything else that's going on. It's just as a general overall statement, like, obviously, you're allowed to not like whatever you want, and you're allowed to like whatever you want, but I just don't understand the anger towards something that was exactly as advertised to you.
No, I really, like, Tara's not overstating it. I was so angry at intermission. I was like, I'm not having fun. I'm not having fun.
She was like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And I was like, oh my God, let's switch seats.
And then we switched seats, and I was just kind of like, in my seat.
I also feel like, to go back on, like, the audience experience of this, I think something that also, like, made me maybe enjoy it a little more is, like, in your original seat, the people next to us, like, obviously lived for that movie. It was, like, a man and his girlfriend that were there because they love the movie and they wanted to see this musical adaptation. And when, like, the DeLorean does what the DeLorean does at the end, like, I swear this man was about to give a standing ovation, and I was just, like, so happy for his reaction on something that he loved so much that I was like, oh,
sure.
This is nice that it's making, like, other people happy.
People are happy. People are excited.
So, and obviously people are happy and excited. The show was on stage, as I said, until December 2024. It's, I don't know. I can understand your point of view of, like, it's not doing anything, like, super innovative or out of the box. Like, let's compare it to a Lion King, where, like, it's an animated movie brought to stage. It's a well-known property, but they're doing something kind of different. However, I don't really like the Lion King, so I'm interested to see, like, when we talk about this way down the line. But, like, I just keep going back to the same statement of, like, you bought into something that was exactly as advertised. So whether you like it or not is kind of irrelevant because it gave you exactly what it told you it was going to give you.
No, it did. But, you know, and here we are. I'm going to say, this is our job. This is what I do for free in my
spare time. Yeah. This is a side gig that doesn't pay us.
But yeah, like that's
like okay, let's ask some further questions here. If this was a free ticket, would you feel differently?
No.
Okay, that's fine. If this was...
We see things on free tickets all the time, and I come out being like, that's... Not all the time, but I come out being like, that was...
Well, whatever. But also maybe this is part of your, like, end of last year statement of, like, existential crisis of do you hate everything?
Yeah, yeah, maybe typically I would have been able to find something to...
There's one song you liked in this, love. But we'll go back to it. We'll get to it later.
Yeah, maybe I'd be able to find something to love in it in another time, but this year I was just, like, very uncharitable towards it. I was not willing to give it the benefit of the doubt at all. It didn't catch me correctly. I do believe the word that I used that day was this felt soulless. Like, and again, like, I don't...
She went much harsher and it was very mean. And I was just like, this is someone's... Just because... Okay, the exact quote was, there was no passion for anybody in this. It was nobody's passion project. And I actually disagree with you there. Yeah, because it obviously was someone's passion project.
No, I agree. I felt this is no one's passion project. I remember saying that now. This is what I said. I said it felt very soulless and that this was no one's passion project. No one, and maybe I'm wrong, but the way it came across to me, the way I felt walking out was... I felt that no one watched Back to the Future and was like, something is sparked in me to make this into a musical. What it felt like, a bunch of executives got into a boardroom and said, how can we make a hit on the West End on Broadway and make money? And then they crowdsourced a bunch of different things. And then by committee, they selected, oh, you know what? A lot of people love Back to the Future, and then made a musical from it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
and again, the show we saw the night before, which has flaws as discussed, that was somebody's passion project. You know what I mean? Like,
to their fault.
Yeah. To sometimes their detriment. But you know what I felt in that? And I was like, someone had an idea. And they were like,
but I like, don't, you can't even, you can't happen. Compare these because the goal was to make money from this project. The goal for Here Lies Love was not to make money from that project. They wanted to get this finally on stage for a wider audience. This is literally to make money. So again, I just don't think that like you can be so mad about something that achieved exactly what it wanted to
achieve. No, no, no. I'm happy that they've achieved, I'm happy that they're making money. I'm happy people are employed, but I'm not happy that
that it exists.
No, not that it exists. Like, things can exist. But I'm not happy that it felt like every single decision made on this project was for the benefit of investors.
I don't and not feel for the same benefit way, but I can understand why Broadway. You feel this way. I just don't feel the same way because I did think that it was just like, it's not revolutionary. It's not anywhere close to the best thing I've ever seen. Will I see it again? No, but I would recommend it.
I mean, I would not recommend it to people, but I would also say that I that I really disliked it. Yeah, and then, like, to go back to our seats a bit, and I do feel like this impacted as well. I feel like the Winter Garden is an extremely wide theater.
Yeah.
And so sitting on the extreme side, in the moments where the DeLorean is time traveling, it's extremely obstructive.
There's a lot off the top of the show that you miss. Mm-hmm. A lot.
That I totally miss. And I felt, if this is the show and I can't see it, what's here? What is here?
Well, again, like, I that's obviously not a fault to this specific show. I mean, I guess you could say that, like, their set design could be a little bit different, but I also think they're
not even from my seat, but it's like, okay, if all that the show is offering is this special effect...
But that is exactly what is as advertised.
No, but like, where is...
Like, there isn't, but all... you're looking for something that doesn't exist.
Right, exactly, exactly.
So...
But why isn't that there?
Because it didn't, show, it doesn't need to be there.
Gonna be offering me, if all the show is going to be offering me is special effects...
But like, it I'm literally, just but that, but I understand that, but you were interested enough to buy a ticket for it. So like, we didn't, like, you didn't have to buy a ticket for this. So like, I just, it's literally advertised as like magic on stage. It's special effects at their finest. It's set design. It's this, not once is this like, wow, a great story. It's not saying that at all. It's not telling you any of this.
What I'm saying is, I'm not interested in seeing someone do back handsprings across a stage. Okay? Like, I'm not interested in tricks. If a trick
then you went to the then story, you went to the wrong show.
Sure, absolutely. But I also can sit here and say, I cannot. I want to make sure people are informed going into this show. There,
watch the trailer. You are informed of what the show is. I don't know why you thought it would be different.
It's not that I thought it would be different, but I
it is a show that is tricks for tricks' sake. Like, that is what it is. Like, at its core, that is what it is. But that, again, I just need a repeat. I need a button that says exactly as advertised, because that literally is exactly what they tell you it's going to be. You also could say that, like, all of the performances leading up to it that were on TV, even the Thanksgiving Day Parade, not good, but we still went to see it.
Yeah. And I guess that was my mistake. but yeah, like, as a critic,
but
you don't
get
to be like, oh, I pass over that one, or
I mean, you do. You can. You're allowed to do that.
No, but like, okay, like, obviously we don't work for, like, a newspaper. We're not, and we have a bit more agency in, like, what we see, what we don't see. But when you're, let's say, a newspaper critic for movies, right? You don't get to be like, oh, I'm not going to see that one. That's not really my wheelhouse. Like, you see all and you have opinions on all.
I understand. I just don't think that we can fault something that was exactly as advertised.
I will fault it. Like, it can be whatever it wants to be, but what I'm saying is, like, go to Universal Studios. It's better bang for your buck.
It's actually not. Not anymore.
Well, I mean, it's also very expensive, but at least there's, like, multiple rides and multiple things.
Well, you can't watch this at Universal Studios. As mentioned at the beginning of the episode, the Back to the Future ride has been replaced by The Simpsons.
Yeah. If you want Back to the Future specifically, you're kind of stuck here. But if you want to go in a seat and see a giant screen projected in front of you, like, Universal Studios is the place for you.
I guess. I mean, there's obviously, like, there was quite a lot of practical set, more than I thought that there was going to be.
Sure.
I thought that it was going to be a full projection show, which would have been
there were all projections, though.
There were, but, like, the school had lockers. Mean Girls doesn't even have lockers.
Oh, wow. The lockers.
Well, but that's a practical set piece. Like, there are many shows that are showing high school, like, high schools that don't have lockers. Like, the car is there. There's a car on stage. Like,
yeah, the car is there. But then when the car is time traveling, it's behind a scrim, and there's projections on the scrim.
Well, but how else are you supposed to show that we're moving?
Well, they did something at the end of the show that was somewhat exciting, but at that point, it was, again, a back handspring for back handspring's sake and wasn't doing anything for the story at all.
That didn't bother me. Again, it made everybody very happy in the audience.
And no, everyone was really excited. Cool. But for me, I agree, really cool technology, but, like, it wasn't doing anything for the story, for the narrative. It was just like, here's this really cool thing we can do.
And can only
unrelated to the 2 hours before that you just watched.
Yeah.
Like, it's very cool. Like, I'm not going to say it's not cool. It's really cool. But again, it felt very separate from the 2 hours
that
we just watched.
I do agree. I obviously think that's a safety issue, that they can't do it multiple times. There's obviously reasons
that
they're
on. It requires a lot of setup.
Yeah, like, we watched everybody walk off the stage so that they could do this car trick.
It was funny, like, they, like, all, like, huddled around the car, and I was like, okay, there's either two things happening. Either they're, like, strapping those people in,
which they probably were,
which they were, or they're going down a trap door, because the car is going with nobody in it, but then they did end up being, like, you know, harnessed in.
Here's the other thing, too. I think that's also something that, like, we knew that it was going to happen at some point, so we were waiting for it to happen the entire show.
Well, everyone knew, because the ushers went out before the show started. They're like, do not take pictures of the car.
Oh, I didn't hear that. No.
Because we were, like, a few rows apart. The ushers were like, I know everyone wants to see the car. Do not take pictures of the car. Do not take your phones out. Do not do this. Like, I'm sure they've had this issue in the past where the car comes out in that moment and everyone whips out their phones to wants to take a picture.
But
the ushers are preemptively like, do not photograph the car.
But, I mean, I think that's also just as a general, like, the car is the first thing when it comes on at the very beginning. They probably don't want people filming that either.
I'm sure. But I do think they're speaking about...
Or just a full-on... I don't even think there is a full bootleg of this show.
There might be a West End one. Probably. I've heard in the West End, the car comes even further.
Well, I just think it's based on, like, theater rigging, right? Yeah, like, the Winter Garden is not rigged specifically to do probably what they would like it to
they
do.
They got these things and put in whatever they need. But yeah, like, it's just, you're able to do what you're able to do based on the house, based on cost, whatever. Yeah. Imagine, okay, we've talked about this, but like a no-fly show.
But it's happened, right? Didn't you read a Reddit page?
No, it has happened. Yes. I was on Reddit where someone was like, yeah, the show kind of ended abruptly a little bit. Like,
I guess it would just go straight from like that final dialogue scene to like the curtain call singing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, again, you're not missing any plot because, again, this no, moment but, has but no plot significance at all.
That is a trick for trick's sake. It is because it's fan service. It's something that the people mm-hmm. want to see. But, like, back to what I was saying about, like, some of the practical set, that, like, Marty and the whatever sign that comes down, beautiful.
Yeah.
Great. Not used enough. Could have been used twice.
The Marty and the pinheads that come down right at the end.
The one thing that I will say about this, again, I'm not here to say that it's great, because I actually don't think that it is, but I don't...
You now cast yourself as a defender of Back to the Future.
I will defend the fact that it is as advertised till the day that I die, because it literally is as advertised, but, like, I don't think that it's, like... Again, I would still recommend this. I think that my parents would love this. Like, it's fun. It's a fun show. If you love the movie, then, like, yeah, you'll probably enjoy this. But... I do think that some of the costumes are pretty cheap looking. There are moments that I just think could be cut in general, but I don't know. Like, I really can't be mad at something that told me it was going to be exactly what it was.
Well, I can be mad. I am mad.
I know you are mad. I just think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong for not liking it. I just don't really understand the anger towards something that told you it was going to be exactly what it was.
Down to the
very last, like, red vest that he's wearing. Which also, it was Broadway Cares, and there was a very long auction that happened at the end of the show.
They really tried to get money for it. I was like, let it go. Let it go.
But also, people were just, like, being so slow. I don't think the audience knew what was going on, exactly, because...
It was a matinee audience.
Yeah. And they didn't really explain, like, the Broadway Cares red bucket situation because they probably thought that these people had seen Broadway shows before, but 90% of that audience had not.
It was a holiday weekend. It was a lot of families.
To be honest, based on, like, what this show is, I actually think a seat in, like, the first few rows of the mezzanine is where you should be for this.
Yeah. I agree. I don't even know
the orchestra. Unless you're, like, pretty rear orchestra.
I think you want to be far back.
Yeah, because there's a lot, like, just to take in the projection so that it doesn't feel overwhelming. This is not a show to see from the front row at all. Because you'd just be, like, kind of lost in what's going on, I think, at least. So I would say, like, above or at the back. But center. You have to be center. Which is hard because the Winter Garden is, like, the least center theater.
It's so wide.
But yeah, like, when I saw Beetlejuice in that theater, I think we were row, like, S or R, like, on the aisle closest to the middle. And that would be a perfect seat for this because it's basically, like, center, but at the back. Okay, well, was there anything that you liked? Other than, I guess, some of the people.
I think everyone in there was doing a fine job. I think Casey Likes was doing a good job. I think Roger Bart was giving caricature a little bit, and I understand that the character is a bit over the top, but I don't know. I wasn't that impressed by him, mm-hmm. by his personal performance. Can we talk about the dad?
Yeah, let's talk about the dad.
Oh my god. I think Hugh Cole, who plays the father,
who's from the West End,
him and Roger Bart were both from the West End, did a really wonderful job. I think we talked about this, but there is something when a character choice is being made, and then when the musical numbers happen, they kind of drop the character choice to do choreography. No.
He committed.
Every moment, the character choice, he was doing the choreography with the character choice. My hesitation is with the character, not with the actor, with the characterization of the character. I was watching it and I was just like,
why is he doing what he's doing?
why is he being like this? I understand. I've seen the movie. I understand he is also like that. It felt a little bit more heightened on stage, which everything feels more heightened on stage. But I just felt, and maybe I don't even know how to say this properly, but I was like, does this character have a developmental delay? Like, that's how I felt watching this. And it just made me a little bit weird.
There's a lot of like the character is very awkward. Which mm-hmm. I think when you play over the top on stage is where things get a little fuzzy of, like, what are you actually doing right now? And then also, mm-hmm. like, there's a walk that this character has that's, again, he really committed to the bit. Yeah. He never lost it once.
Nailed the performance. And everyone is obsessed with this character. And, like, he's doing an amazing job.
Like, everyone is laughing. There's, like, a very specific, if you've seen the movie, the dad laughs in a very specific way. We've also just, like, we've recently figured out that, like, the character of the dad is kind of problematic anyway because he's, like, kind of creepy the way that, like,
well, he's, like, him and the bushes, mom... Like,
yeah, end up together.
Like watching her and through, like, her window.
Is that supposed to be charming? I'm not really sure, but maybe yes. that's just, you know, like, a movie choice that maybe doesn't hold up today. You know what I mean?
Yes. Certain things that were played as, like, charming and just, like, haha, funny, you know, when you do them in 2023, 2024, you're like, oh, that's
why.
Weird.
Yeah. When was this, like, was it 26?
Oh, when is this musical in the West?
Oh, it was 2022. Was like when 2022? They won the. Yeah, let's not forget here that this won Best New Musical at the Olivier's. Let's just say that.
Please read the competition out. Because
the competition was Frozen, Moulin Rouge, and then the other two, I've lost the page. But like two of the names that I don't even know what they are.
Sit Up, Stand Up, or something? Was that one of them?
Get Up, Stand Up, something like that. Yeah.
I feel like that's a bio musical. I feel it's a Bob Marley bio musical.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, here. Get Up, Stand Up, the Bob Marley musical, The Drifters Girl. I don't know what that is.
Is it about the Drifters, like the band? Or is it the music of the Drifters?
It says The Drifters Girl is a jukebox musical about the American vocal group The Drifters. Okay, so it was basically up against two bio musicals and two commercial properties. Well, it's three commercial shows and two bio musicals.
Which are also, you know... commercial shows. No.
Although I don't think we're getting the Drifters Girl on Broadway anytime soon.
I don't think that's a very strong lineup overall, personally, that five. Obviously, you know, like, this podcast is a Moulin Rouge fan, but every critic...
A lot of people hate it. Yeah.
Every critique I've heard about Moulin Rouge, the musical, like, is correct. Like, I don't have any... yeah. I don't have any recourse against that, but I guess it was just more to my taste.
Actually,
more to what I liked.
While we're here, I feel like it's kind of interesting to talk about, like, the two of these together. And then we'll get back to, like, the dad in a second, because I did want to talk about the song that he sings, because I like it. But that, I guess, like, was a completely flipped its head take on a commercial popular movie, which is, I'm assuming, why you enjoyed it more than this?
I think I really like Moulin Rouge, the movie, because I already feel like it, like, subverts expectations in using the pop music to tell the story. And then I felt like the musical took that even further. Mm-hmm. So you could say... So it absolutely is... Like, this music... That musical was made because Moulin Rouge is a very popular movie. You use very popular songs. Like, it's just, like, easy tagline, easily marketable. But I do feel that they are almost subverting expectations in some ways. They are... changing things to make them suit stage better, and I like the way that it fits on stage as well. Like, I love the way that they use choreography, I love the way that they use set and characterization, I like that it's a story about, like, writing and storytelling, and I think that it, like, Broadway and musical is, like, a good venue to be telling that kind of story. Like, it just worked all together better for me.
I think it's actually interesting because on the West End, people really don't like it, which I think is so interesting because, like, not that, again, like, the critics don't love this show, but, like, the audience is going to Moulin Rouge. Like, it's always busy. People are always attending on Broadway. But in the West End, people do not like it. I don't even think it will last very long there.
It's very interesting. Like, it is very interesting what hits there, what hits here, what different cultures have different responses to, that the West End really, like, connected to Back to the Future is kind of random. to me.
I mean, like...
Because I feel like it's such an American story.
Yes, but they also love a prop. They love a gimmick. They love tricks.
So true. Everything is a little bit, like...
The bits. They love... The Brits
more,
love
they
bits.
They love a bit. There were so many bits. Everything's a little more, like, Technicolor there, almost. Like,
yes.
Everything a little more garish.
Yes.
In a fun way.
Yeah.
Well, yes,
maybe we should have seen it in bits. London. Maybe you would have felt differently in London with a British audience.
So much Roger Bart and Casey Likes Bits. Like,
yes. There was a lot. But again, like, British love that. They love
the
bit.
I know.
It's like their favorite
it's
thing
like,
ever.
Like every 20 minutes it would be like a panto for 5
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, kind
like,
of.
Let's move on. Let's go.
And a lot of it might have been improv. I feel like based on like how Roger Bart feels that day, if he's willing to play with Casey Likes or not.
When you're doing a show for a long time, I feel like my guess is you feel like you have a bit more room to play. Like when you know
yeah.
a character and you know a part so well, you can kind of like dismantle it in certain ways. So yes, I do feel like sometimes he was trying to get a laugh out of Casey or trying to like do something new to keep it fresh, keep it exciting. Fine.
Yeah.
I don't need 5 minutes of you guys going back and forth saying the same word at each other over and over and over again.
I don't even remember
what
it was.
Happen.
Yeah.
I don't
but
know what it was.
It was multiple occasions.
I was like, I'm done with this. I'm done. And I love a bit. I do like bits, but like,
Not this one.
I was already in a bad mood, and I was like, I can't do with bits on top of that.
Okay, let's talk about some songs, because speaking of, like, the dad and commitment, I did enjoy the song Put Your Mind to It, which is sung by Marty and George. It was, like, the when they were trying on the shirts before, like, the dance.
Yes.
It's, like, very close at the top of Act 2.
Stop apologizing. Be anything you want.
The Act 1 finale is straight up garbage. Let's just put that out there. It's actually trash.
Most of the music in this is pretty garbage.
So the music is done by, it's Glenn Ballard, who normally gives his A game.
Yes. Yes, Glenn Ballard writes, like, pop music as well. Like,
mm-hmm. It's,
And then the music was by, what is his name?
Alan Silvestri?
Alan Silvestri, who did the score of the movie. So
yes.
The best musical moments are
I was
going to
say, that like, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
Great. The
like,
orchestra?
Slay. Well, they took directly from the movie. Like, that score is so grand. It, like, perfectly encapsulates the car, like, everything. And when they're playing that directly in, like... The audience
that's
is so
that's
excited.
Also,
me too. It's so good.
The audience gets really like amped at that moment. There was we were
They're
getting
like, I know this.
We were getting a
like,
lot
they know
of
know how to feel
towards the end of the show when like Doc is on the clock tower like trying to whatever send us back in time. We're getting a lot of just like straight up orchestrations and it's really fun to hear that. It's probably like if you ever go to those like movies playing at like the TSO with
the
live orchestra. Yeah. Like that's what we were getting, which is like you don't often get to hear some like amazingly orchestrated music done by a live band. So I'm sure for audiences like Back to the Future that 90% of that audience has never seen a Broadway show, to hear that music in such a grand way is very exciting. So I do agree. That is the downfall to the show that is the best music in the show.
The best stuff is the stuff that was pre-existing.
Like back in time? Great.
Please don't drive 88. Don't want to be late again. So take me away. I don't mind. But you better promise me you'll be back in time. Gotta get back.
News saved this. Sorry.
Well, there's now a Huey Lewis in the News musical.
The Heart of Rock and Roll? Is that
The Heart of Rock and Roll is this season on Broadway as well, so it's kind of interesting that, like, that is happening. I wonder if, like, The Power of Love will be there, too. You know? We don't really
Probably.
Know anything about that show at this time, but Yeah, I thought the other thing that I think was, like, Casey sounded so good on those songs specifically. I also think it was funny because we met with Tim from Broadway Up Close, like, right before we saw this. And he was like, I don't know if this is just, like, a character choice by Michael J. Fox and Casey Likes, but they're, like, doing the Marty voice. And he definitely was. Like, watching the movie, it's the same tone.
I remember Tim being like, Casey Likes is, like, doing the Marty voice. And he's like, I didn't even know that there was a Marty voice
until Casey
was doing it. And he was like, oh, he's doing the voice. And then when I watched like half the movie earlier today, and I was like,
he's doing the voice. Yeah.
It's like,
I also like, I love Casey Likes. I, as we know, cast him in this musical. And I think it's funny because
you saw Almost Famous. You were one of the 12 people that saw Almost Famous.
I was.
On Broadway.
I feel like we need to talk about whatever's happening with that on a different day of, like, the now post-workshop that is, like, apparently so much better than the what made it to Broadway, but that's another conversation. But I did see an interview kind of recently, or maybe it was something that Casey posted on Instagram, that he was offered this during the final week of Almost Famous. And I just think about someone who, how old is he? Like, 20?
Early.
Like, 22?
Yeah, very young. I keep Googling his birthday. He was born on Christmas Day, as we remember.
I know, but what was the year? Okay, let's look.
It's gotta be like 2000 or 2001.
Age. He's 22, 2001. 2001. Christmas Day. But I just think of like how like crazy that is for someone like him who's so young, first of all, to like lead. This is the second Broadway show that he's leading because he was the lead.
No ensemble tracks for him.
Like. No, no. And to think that, like, you know, at the age of, like, 19, probably when he was cast in Almost Famous for the Out of Town, or maybe he was even younger because I think they were, like, workshopping it. I think, like, right after the Jimmys is when he kind of, like, was brought into Almost Famous. And then, like,
pre-pandemic, right?
Yeah. And then
it
to
was 2019.
Think... of like, oh God, my very first Broadway show was closing, like, what do I do next? He didn't even have to think about that because he was already cast in this huge commercial show. Like, Casey Likes, we should all be looking up to you if you want to be an actor in theater. He's really doing it.
No, he's doing wonderful. Sometimes things, like, obviously he's very talented, but sometimes, you know, you're just the right age at the right time for the right things that come
Although, and we like, do have to say, a highlight of this show... his jeans.
He looked great in the jeans. He looked really good.
They really tailored those jeans. And I was like, wow, good tailoring. Maybe I should get things tailored if things can look good on me.
Do we think 501? Do we think, what Levi do we think this is?
It was definitely a Levi because we saw. But it was like, man, these like fit him perfectly. And he's such a little like lanky.
Long.
Yeah. Very long, but fit him perfectly. The Converse that he was wearing, it was just like they really brought, I mean, his costume specifically was like the nostalgia factor. However, like also could have been bought at a vintage store or like Party City. So
sometimes this is not even a problem with the show. It's not a problem, but just something I feel and I felt watching the show, which is separate from the other problems I have with this show. Sometimes when something is so, let's say, iconic and has permeated the culture so much, when you revisit it, you're like, this is so corny, this is so cheesy, this is so derivative. And then you realize, oh no, everyone else is copying this. So to see him in like the jeans and the shirt and the vest, I was like, oh, but like, he has to wear the jeans.
Like,
the shirt,
imagine
the
if
vest.
He didn't.
No, I know, he has to wear it. He has to wear the jeans and the shirt and the vest. But I was like, oh, so boring. But it is the original, and everyone else is like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, when when something is so iconic to a moment and then has been copied a million times over and over and over again, and when you revisit that iconic thing, you're like, hate, ugly. But not hate, ugly, but like, it's just, it feels weird. I feel this way. The best way to describe it is whenever I see a clip of Elvis dancing, I'm like, that's so corny, that's so cheesy. But then I remember that at the time it was revolutionary.
I was going to say,
And now everyone is everything that people have done, people have imitated it a million times. People have impersonated. People have, you know, been inspired by it a million times. That when you watch the original, you're like, the loop is almost closed. I don't know. And that's what I felt seeing a lot of like costuming and Back to the Future on stage and even just like stylistic choices.
Well, it's also like is it the same time period as like Grease? Because that's what it felt to me.
Well, the 50s period is...
Oh, true, right. We're in two time zones here,
And it is interesting because when the movie was made, the 80s period was present day, and then the 50s was going back in time, and now...
Both are back in time.
both are back in time. And if we were to time travel, you know, the same distance of time that Marty did, we would be in, I don't know, the late 90s, early 2000s. Like,
that was actually something, though, that I did like about this production. When we first walked in, they had this big, long, like, big scrim up that had, like, mm-hmm. I don't know what they were. But it reminded me of, like, when I saw Be More Chill, very similar, like, mm-hmm. wires. But it had the date. Like
a motherboard. Yes.
It said, like, November whatever, which I was like, oh, my God, do they change this every day? That's so fun.
I do have actually a note, a bone to pick with that. I think it was Daylight Savings Time related. But so at the start of the show, basically, it says the date and the time of when your show is, and then it's like, oh, we're going back in time, and it like takes you back. But it's, our show was at 2 p.m. and it said 3 p.m. on the stage, and I was like, I think this is daylight savings time related, but like somebody fixed this, like detail oriented.
I wasn't paying attention to that specifically. So you really walked in hating it as soon as you sat down.
No. But I was like, no. At that moment, I was like, oh, funny, like daylight savings time.
The other thing too, like you had said theme park, which I agree to a sense, but it's also like video game. So think that as well. If you're going to the show. Again, I think kids would love it. Their kids did love it. Like kids do love it. The other character that I think that we could completely chop is the mayor and all of his singing scenes, because what is the actual point of that?
Random.
Or sorry, is
he Jelani Remy?
Yes, he's the mayor and also works at the diner. Yes.
Yeah, he's doing double duty. He's doing multiple characters. I never noticed the fellow travelers ad right in this playbill. Never saw it before. I was kind of like, I don't care what. He had a full song.
It was not, that song was
chop.
Too much.
Chop.
It was also, it wasn't just like a 3 minute, it was like a 5 minute full song.
It was a production number.
Tapping, we were tapping. We were.
Yeah, I was not about that. Sometimes
I will say the ensemble working really hard. They have a lot of costume and wig changes.
Costume change. Yes, a lot of it just felt like we're doing a musical number here because it's a musical. And we have to do a musical number. You know what I mean? Like we're doing a song here because, well, we're here for a musical. So here's a song. Like we weren't giving. You need to hear my thoughts in this song. I need to express myself in this song.
There was a couple of those, but like not enough of those.
Yeah, it's like the best way to tell the story is through song. It's like, oh, no, you're at a musical, so here's a bunch of girls in silver lamé bodysuits, you know,
doing dancing on a DeLorean. Like, yeah.
Exactly. Like it wasn't like.
The doc songs are like, very weak. The doc songs are very weak. Like, the best stuff to me is the Marty stuff, which I guess, like, the argument
that's
would be, like
personal
it
story.
Should be. Like, that should be the best stuff. So, like, I guess that's good. But, like, what's the girl, like, his girlfriend's name? Like, we saw her for 1 second, Linda. And then we never saw her. No, that's the sister, I think.
Linda's the sister? I was like, what's the mother's name? Jennifer?
Jennifer Parker? Yeah. Also, like, the characterization of Biff in this is, like, everyone is over the top. Like, just know that
extreme,
everyone is over the top. Extremes. Yes.
Yeah.
We're punching very big. Like, that's what we're doing here. I don't know.
Were the lockers, like, were they on top of the lockers at some point? Did I make that up?
No, they were on top of the lockers. That was the Act One finale, which was garbage.
It was reminding me of, do you remember in Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, when they're on top of the, when they're on top of the Hogwarts Express, they're fighting the Trolley Witch?
I actually didn't mind that, but it was pretty bad, but I didn't mind it.
Oh, when Harry Potter and the Cursed, you didn't mind that?
No.
No, I swear I.
But I also didn't mind, as discussed, the day that we saw it, I didn't mind the projection clock tower scene, which you absolutely hated.
I really didn't like the projection clock tower scene. Again, it's just giving theme park. It's giving.
I know, but like, I don't think that that's bad for some reason.
Well, I do.
I know you do.
It's not what I'm here for.
As we've listened to you say for the last hour. I know it's not your goal, but let me remind you, you bought a ticket to this.
Yes, okay. But I'm here to critique.
I can only
freely critique things that I didn't pay for. No. I actually can critique more because I paid for it. I actually can be harsher on something because I paid money that I earned towards it.
I can't go back in the circle and say what I've been saying all episodes, but
I actually feel I'm almost more entitled to my opinions because
you are entitled to any opinion you want. I just think that there were so many things to tell you that you were about to see this and then you saw it. Whether good or bad, it still warned you. You just didn't take the warning.
I don't know. I knew, but at the same time,
I don't think you did know, because I think if you walked in knowing exactly that it was going to be that, you might not have hated it as much as you did.
I think maybe I just heard too many people be like, it's so great. It's amazing.
I honestly think the two people we can pinpoint your entire bad experience on is Alessandra and Jake.
Let's blame them. Let's blame them. They're not going to listen to this. Alessandra and Jake. Actually, let's shout out Jake.
I actually think Jake specifically
bought a drink. bought the cup for like $32.
$32.
Because I think he got a double or something.
He did get a double. I also think he was bamboozled, like we all are, at a Broadway show, because crazy. They actually don't tell you, like, the prices of the big cup versus the small. You got to search for it. It's like fine print. They want you to pay for the double.
Crazy.
But I actually do think that they kind of hindered your experience, because they absolutely lived for this show. As quoted, the best show that she's ever seen. So I really think that made your expectations jump a bit higher. And if we had never heard this from them, maybe you would feel differently.
Yeah. And so that's why I, as a public service, am giving this opinion. So people can have various opinions going into something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If they're only hearing from Alessandra and Jake, we'll never listen to this. And so we'll never know that they're like name dropped this heavily on this episode.
It was a truly shocking statement to hear that it was the best thing that they've ever seen.
Even when they said it, I was like, no, there's no way.
Exactly. That's when I was like, are they talking about the same show that we've heard that it's
serious?
Like, not great, but fun, which I still believe it's not great, but fun, you know, like it's I don't know. I don't know that there's,
but I do think, look, will I ever trust their recommendation on a musical again?
No.
But do I think that they are a good case study in the audience of this show?
I was going to say,
absolutely.
If we're going to talk about what I said at the beginning of the episode, of that, I actually don't think that you are the target audience for this show, because
right.
I also don't think that I am. They are. They are the target audience for this show.
Absolutely.
Are,
I know.
They
like,
are
one
big
of Jake's
fans of the movie. Like, if you were a big fan of the movie,
they're going to be impressed. This sounds like I'm dissing them. They're going to be really impressed by spectacle.
Yeah, like, if you, and also, like, again, not a knock to them, but, like, they do not see anywhere close to the number of shows that we see. So when you see something that is spectacle theater, it's like, oh, whoa, that's really fun. So
people in the audience really feel like they are getting their money's worth with what they are seeing on stage. They can see their money that they've spent on stage.
Yeah.
And I do think that really impacts people's enjoyment.
Yeah. Anything else to say on this before we wrap this up?
I think I've said enough.
We are interrupting this episode for breaking news. It is currently February 22nd. I don't even know what day we recorded our Back to the Future episode, but we have some news for Toronto. And Steph, since this is your favorite show of all time, please give us the news.
Well, everyone's so excited, me included. I'm the most excited. Back to the Future, the musical, is actually going to be part of the next Mirvish season. The 2024-2025 season will include, as one of its 7 shows, Back to the Future, the musical. The tour will be hitting Toronto summer of 2025. How are we feeling, Tara?
I mean, here's the thing. Thoughts aside from this show, it's actually wild to me that we are getting a tour of this caliber so soon after it's opened on Broadway. Typically, we don't get these bigger shows till like 4 years into their tour. Think Hamilton, think Six, think Moulin Rouge that's coming this season, that's entering its year 4. I believe Beetlejuice also this season entering its year 4. So to think that we are getting 2 shows this season, Life of Pi and Back to the Future, that are basically brand new. I actually don't even think the Life of Pi tour dates have been posted as of this date of recording. It's crazy to me that we have now entered this kind of like space of conversation. I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see it again, because I think, like, as you'll hear in this episode, there are things that we think will only happen on Broadway. So to see it in a touring space, also very interesting that next season all of the shows are at the Ed Mirvish Theater. That's a huge theater. Not all of the shows. Oh, they are.
No, you're right.
Lion
you're totally
King.
Right. You're totally right. Sorry, I was lying.
Lion King, I mean, we'll do a full episode on this in, like, September, August, whenever we do our, like, theater season preview. Steph, how are you feeling about the tour coming to Toronto?
Look, obviously, if you've made it this far into the episode, you know that this is obviously my favorite show ever. No, I hate the show. I'm actually kind of upset about the fact that I might have to see it again.
But maybe with a full view this time, you'll feel a little differently.
Maybe, but, you know, and, you know, not that original casts are everything, but if I did not like it with the, you know, full set, full Broadway set with the original Broadway cast, I'm not sure why I'm going to like it with a probably diminished set and effects, you know, a different cast. Questionable. We shall see. We shall see. It's already a show I'm, like, not giving any favors to, so we shall see.
What I will say is that this season is, like, pretty commercial theater, but I also think that these shows are all really big names, and people seem to be really excited about it, so that's good news for Toronto and for Mirvish next season, and you'll hear more about that and everything else that's happening in Toronto for the 2024-2025 season in the summer. And with that, here's the rest of our episode. Okay, well, let's rate it. I literally could not even imagine where you're gonna go here on this one.
I'm gonna give it 3. I almost gave it a 2. I'm gonna give it 3 out of 10 red vests.
Okay, great. What did we land on here on, like, half points? You say no because then it makes it out of 5?
It makes it out of 20 if it's a half point.
So are we allowed or we're not allowed?
I say no. No half points.
Okay.
Be definitive.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10 on this. It's a 50% score for me. I enjoyed it, but also didn't. So we're right smack dab in the middle of 5 out of 10 DeLoreans. Again, everyone in this show, so talented. Having a great time. They're literally having a blast on stage. And they will for basically a year. The other thing that I will say before we actually wrap this up is that, like, Casey obviously not wearing a wig, but everybody else that plays Marty wears the most awful wig I've ever seen. So
to make him look like Casey. Casey's got this, like, great curly hair.
It's so good. Everyone else is in a drop hideous... the hair care routine, Casey. The curly girls want to know.
Everyone else is in a hideous curly wig. Like, whenever JJ Nyman goes on, rip that wig off. Just let him have his.
But it's funny because if you look at the playbill, he's kind of got like a side bang.
Like combed out. It's like combed out.
Which is not the Michael J. Fox look either, so I don't really know what they were going for there.
No, I know. It's odd.
Okay, so
in the show his hair looks good.
Yeah. He's got great curls. It's kind of mullety though.
Yeah, it's giving 80s. I was happy. I know understudies are amazing, but I was very happy to get to see, like, him and Roger Bart.
Yeah. We had
really good luck that weekend, I think.
We did have very good luck because the weekend after was not good luck. Yeah. I do think this is not to say always because, like, some, I'll say this out loud and then someone will be like, I heard this and it's wrong. But, like, typically holiday weekends, everyone is in. Typically. Yeah. Just because they know that, like, a lot of people are traveling for this. So they, like, unless you're, like, deathly ill, typically holiday weekends, I think you're kind of in the clear because every other, and also we went on a weekend. A weekday is questionable sometimes as well.
Yeah, there's really no way to know.
I do know that Casey was out the entire following week on scheduled vacation, so we were lucky in that sense. However, these days, unlike before, they do, for leads at least, tell you when they're going on vacation, which is nice. It's typically on, like, the telecharge front page before you buy the tickets. It will say, like, so-and-so is on vacation. Or on, like, SeatGeek, I know, was doing it for Funny Girl when, like, Leo was out. So that is a new thing that's happening now, which I, as someone that travels to see, appreciates.
In 2018, when I went with my friend to see My Fair Lady, and I was looking up tickets... I was looking up tickets for the weekend we were there, and it said Norbert Leo Butz will not be performing in this, and this date. So plus years ago. So I made sure to go on the day that he didn't have a scheduled vacation in the weekend we were there.
Obviously, sickness is different. We can never predict when someone's going to be sick. But
obviously, and understudies swings are so talented, so amazing, but sometimes you want to see a specific person.
The other thing, too, as a tip, a lot of these people post their vacation schedules on their social media pages. Betsy Wolf always telling you when she's out of Anne Juliet. So if you are interested in seeing someone like Casey Legs or Roger Bart, like, just, you can do a little bit of research if you're planning to, like, fly to New York to see a show, is my recommendation. And also, yeah, like, look up tickets on Telecharge or wherever the tickets are being sold before you stand in a rush line for, with your chairs and your book. And also just know that you can only get two tickets if you're going to rush.
And they're not guaranteed to be together.
No. And even if Steph and I went up together and we were both looking for two tickets, those are also not guaranteed to be together. We are never going to get four seats in a row unless the show was, like, completely unsold.
Well, remember at Here Lies Love, which we talked about, where, like, every person in the rush line, we were just, like, all sitting next to each other in one row.
Well, that was actually unexpected. If we went up there asking for eight tickets, they probably would have given them to us.
We're like, sure, here. But yeah, like, we were sitting next to the guy who was in front of us, and to our other side was the girl behind us, so we were just, like, all hanging out.
That is actually my favorite part of a rush experience, is when, like, you get to your seats, and then you get to see where, like, the person behind you is sitting. Like, there was, like, a woman and her daughter that were behind us in the rush line. They were, like, two rows in front of you. Yes.
So, I actually think the front would have been even worse.
I agree. I actually think specifically where that woman was sitting was the worst seat in the entire theater.
Horrible seat.
Because, like, it was, you can't so far to the side. That's the thing. Like,
there were screens up along the side. It wasn't.
There was a lot of, like, metal decals that were.
Yes, but no, like, they had screens up along the boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, extended, like, when the, like, stuff was going on there, when the, like, DeLorean was going, and, I was behind the screen. Did you see on, TikTok, I think her name is, like, Catherine, she's a Broadway producer, she works on, like, Gatsby, mm-hmm. and, do you know what I'm talking about?
I know you're talking
about. She went and saw Gutenberg on Broadway. She paid $120 for a box seat, light right in front of her face. $120. She was livid. She made a whole, like, multi-minute.
But, like, this is the thing. At what point are you just like, I can't, like, we just won't sell this seat? Like, why?
That's what she's saying. She's like, this ticket should not be sold.
Yeah.
This ticket should not have been sold.
Did she complain?
As someone, I don't know if she complained, but she's like, as someone who, like, understands Broadway and, like, goes to Broadway a lot, like, I was probably, like, not even more understanding, but she was like, I was happy it was me and not, like, someone who, this was their first Broadway show, spent $120 on a ticket to be behind a light.
Yeah, that's not
good. Livid.
I just not think all in seats general are, that, like,
should be sold.
Side view seats should be a cheaper ticket than
heavily discounted. Which ours was.
No, but that was a rush ticket. If we were to buy that on Telecharge, it would have been the same price as the one.
No, they would have sold it on Telecharge. So it was sold out. Back to the Future was sold out that night.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming someone paid full price for the ticket I was in.
Yeah.
For that evening.
Well, moving on.
Anyway, moving on.
That's our thoughts on Back to the Future, the musical. And it's now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what's your obsession?
One of the upcoming shows, it might be open by the time this episode is out, for this season, is one that has kind of been, like, floating around for years, I feel. But that is Lempicka. We're talking about Lempicka. I don't remember when it's opening, but this spring. And there are three songs that are already on Spotify from, it was released in 2022. So those three songs are Woman Is, Stay, and the song I'm going to talk about today, which is Perfection. It's sung by George Aboud, who is actually in the Broadway cast as well. He's in the same role. Flame spitting engine, I am a beer machine. Perfection. Destroy the past. Destroy convention. Everything that hinders our ascension. In this new age of the machine, man now can dream of perfection. And when I was first listening to this EP, this, like, little set of three songs, this was my least favorite one. Because I was like, I'm not even quite sure how this will be staged on a stage. I don't know if it fits what my expectation of the show is or not. But as I listened to it again, I felt this song sounds so cinematic. Mm-hmm. This song makes it sound like a movie. I'm so curious to see how it is staged, because it's something that I can't even imagine, and that's something that excites me, because I'm like, oh, whatever they do will be unexpected to me, and that's exciting to me. Like, everyone sounds beautiful on these songs, and I'm so excited to see Eden Espinosa originate a role.
Is this about the, like, painter? This is who this is based on, right?
It is about the painter.
Yeah.
It is about the painter, Lempicka. I was looking her up in, like, the early 20th
century. It will be open
century.
By the time this episode is out, so.
It'll be open. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, early 20th century. She worked in France and in, I think she's Polish, but she worked in France and in the United States, painting these portraits of women. I always think it's really exciting when a musical or any kind of, like, media touches on historical figure, because then there's, like, renewed interest in this person. And for me, it's exciting as, like, to have a highlight on, like, a female artist, because so much in art history you're learning about, like, male painters and male artists and highlights are on them, but now to highlight a female artist and get her story to be told, and even, I don't know, even if it's bad, I've now read her Wikipedia page.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like,
I know who she is.
Obviously, like, I have not even looked up pictures from their Out of Town in La Jolla, which was a couple years ago now, but I really hope that they don't go the projection route for this. I really hope we're getting some actual, like, physical set here.
Yeah, I'm very
It's about a painter. Like, we should get some physical paintings. I don't need to see them on a screen.
I mean, literally, who knows? We're pure speculation here, but everything I've seen from it looks very minimal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything looks very minimal. So, yeah, I'm interested. This is, like, near the top of my list of things I would want to be seeing if I was going to New York anytime soon.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't it?
Whereas, like, if we looked at my list, it's all the commercial properties.
Tara, what's your obsession?
Okay, to stick with Back to the Future, but just in general, I have been saving this obsession for this episode, but finally, after the pandemic, the Broadway.com vlogs are back, and I'm so happy that they're back. I did watch all of the Back to the Future vlogs. Casey led those up. Those ended, like, basically by the time we saw Back to the Future, but I just finished Spamalot. And this is a show that I do not care about. I will not see, but you better believe I did watch every single Leslie Kritzer vlog. And they seem to be having like the best time backstage at that show. Taryn Killam, especially. The final episode of the Spamalot series was the introduction of Jonathan Bennett. He was like tracking Michael Urie that day to see everything that he was doing. So yeah, I'm happy that the Broadway vlogs are back. I wonder with how insane this next season is, like, how many we'll be getting, and wow, who would I like to see do vlogs?
Good question. I feel like they have one camera, because
they
Leslie
do, they're
Kritzer's
still using,
started,
like, a digital camera for this. Can we not use an iPhone?
Leslie Kritzer's blog started after, right after Casey, like, ended. Like, they don't have two cameras to give people, they have one camera.
I'm trying to think, though, like, who would I give it to if I was giving it? Honestly, the answer is to Gatsby, because Jeremy Jordan has done vlogs before.
I'm thinking Water for Elephants, Grant Gustin.
Oh, I think you're right.
I think this is a good pick.
It's probably already happened by the time this episode comes out.
The glee-ification of...
But yeah, I think it's kind of a fun season to have, like, the vlogs return, because there's so much going on. They never do plays. It's always musicals, so... Which I'm thankful for.
Yeah, it's just they know the audience. Okay.
You know who would be good, though? Like, give that camera to Betsy Wolf. Let's take us backstage of Anne Juliet.
Someone at Anne Juliet. That would be really fun.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my obsession of the week. That's our thoughts on Back to the Future, the musical. And we have a lot of, like, musical reviews coming out for the next little while. So stay tuned for those. And you can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a comment.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Off2BOA Podcast with the number 2.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.